All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are wrapping up another week with a Q&A where I will be answering your listener questions dealing with the Atlanta Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is another Q&A. We'll be talking quite a bit about sort of investing in the Falcons offensive line versus their pass rush. We'll talk a little bit more about the offensive line later on today's episode. Some good questions from folks. We got a bunch from Riley Streit, who has been on a previous fan talk, and he sends these very long-winded emails that I rib Riley about. And you guys will actually get to hear some of those questions on today's episode. But let's jump right into it with the first question from Davon Wilson at DWizzy1997 on Twitter. What in general, besides injuries, were the biggest problems for the Falcons last year, and what can they do in the draft to correct it? Well, I think one quick and dirty answer is the pass rush, and I think, boom, you can address that pretty easily with the first-round pick in the draft. I think a little bit more of a longer, more complex answer sort of looks at both the offense and the defense and pretty much says that the defense isn't good enough to sort of stand on its own, and the Falcons are mostly relying on their offense to have to sort of carry the team and carry the bulk of the weight. And I think, you know, one of the arguments I've made against this, in my opinion, much hyped defense is I think the sort of the ceiling for this team is probably an above average unit on par with sort of where the Saints were last year, when the Saints were 14th ranked in both scoring and total defense last year and 11th in defensive DVOA. So I think ultimately they're sort of there an above average, but not a great dominant defense is sort of the ceiling for the Falcons moving forward this year and next year. And you look at that Saints team, you know, over the last season, they had, I think, 10 games where they gave up less than 20 points. You compare it to the Falcons, who over the last two seasons combined have had 11 games where they've given up less than 20 points. So obviously there's room to grow for the Falcons in that regard. But when you look at a lot of those games where the Saints were able to sort of hold defenses to a low point total, you would often see several, you know, probably about a third of those games were when the Saints came out with a really fast start offensively and really got a big lead early in the game and forced the opposing team to play one-dimensional football. And that was something that the Falcons did on a regular basis in 2016 that they haven't done as regularly in 2018 and 2017, and has led to some of the hiccups that they've had in the last couple of years. And so you look at that, and it's part of the reason why I always sort of talk about how, you know, the offense is going to carry the team, because I think, you know, for this team, the best defense, based off of where I think this defense's ceiling is having a good offense. And there's going to be a couple of games where you're going to need your offense to sort of take care of business and really sort of carry, you know, I don't know, 80% of the load. So how do you get your offense to do that? How do you get your offense put your best foot forward offensively? Obviously, the first thing I'm going to say, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you know exactly what I'm saying. I'm talking about being explosive. You know, I think the team has the personnel to be an explosive team. The question has more been the play calling the last couple of years under Steve Sarkisian. We'll see if that changes. One of the questions is, you know, the Falcons are trying to be a more physical team, which is fine if that means that they're going to be this sort of play action heavy type of offense, which is what they were in 2016. Again, that works. If that's what your identity of your team is going to be, we're going to run the football on first down, which we didn't do last year, and we're going to dial up play action passes on second down, and then we're going to let Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley cook on third downs, and that's going to be our bread and butter, then that works. That's fine. I'm not going to complain about that, particularly if it leads to explosive plays. The second thing you have to do on the offense, I think, is you're going to have to fix your offensive line. Because we've seen time and time again over many, many years, but focusing specifically on 2018, you look at some of those games where the Falcons offense struggled the most in last season against teams like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, New Orleans, Baltimore, Dallas. Not coincidentally, in my opinion, those were some of the defenses that tended to rank near the top of the league when you look at sort of certain statistical metrics like quarterback hits or tackles for loss that are typically indicative of teams that have good defensive lines, all of those teams ranked in the top in one or both of those categories. And it just speaks to sort of what you and I all know, is that when other opposing teams are able to control the line of scrimmage, you know, having Matt Ryan, having Julio Jones, having Deion Jones, having all these great, athletic, amazing skill position players counts for nothing because the Falcons get pushed around, they get punched in the mouth and whatnot. And I think, you know, one of the hopes that people have with the signings of guys like Jamon Brown and James Carpenter is that's going to change that, but I don't think it really does. I don't think you're going to go up against the Fletcher Coxes and the Aaron Donalds and feel better about going up against those guys, against those high-level defensive lines than you were a year ago or really over the last couple of years. So I think that's a lateral move at best, you know. But they're bigger, so they look better coming off the bus, but when it actually comes to them playing on the field on Sundays, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. So then the question is, you know, on the outside against the Cameron Jordans, against the Dee Fords, against the J.J. Watts, do you have someone who can handle that? I don't trust Ty Sambrello one bit in that regard. I think you might be able to get that guy in the first round of this year at offensive tackle. Now, you're probably asking, Aaron, do you honestly expect a rookie to go up against those types of guys and take care of business? No, not in year one. But my hope is 2, 3, 4 years down the road, that guy will be able to take care of business. You look at a player specifically like Cameron Jordan, who in the last two seasons in the 4 Falcons-Saints matchups, you can argue that Cameron Jordan was the best player on the football field in at least 3 of those games. And you want to find a guy that's going to make that not be a fact or a stat that I can say 2 years from now or whatever the case may be, where Cameron Jordan was mostly a non-factor or marginally a factor in the next 4 games that the Falcons have. And in my humble opinion, the odds of you finding that guy outside of that 14th overall pick is very low. And so the Falcons are sort of stuck in a little bit of this predicament because they only have 1 first round pick. And the reality kind of boils down to that he can either invest that in their offensive line, and hopefully that will be sort of their Cameron Jordan problem solver, as you may say, or they invest that in their pass rush, and that becomes sort of the thing that maybe can take this defense to another level. And they can only really pick one of those things, and expecting a second or third round pick to be able to sort of move the needle in that regard, I won't say is impossible, but is unlikely. And so which do you choose to invest in? And while I can sit here today and present an argument why it makes sense to invest that in the offensive line, because that's where your franchise quarterback is, that's really where this team's bread is going to be buttered, at least this season and probably in the foreseeable future. Again, part of that is due to the fact that looking back over the last 20 years, I believe the Falcons have only had 2 seasons where they finished in the top 10 in defensive DVOA, I think 1998. In 2011. And so part of it is just this mental block of being a Falcon fan and watching this team for 2 decades and just not seeing a good defense. And so just like, oh, well, you know, that's just not going to happen. I just can't even wrap my brain around the idea of the Falcons being a good defense. So better invest in the offense, better make it that, you know, these next 5 years under Matt Ryan are as the best as possible, because if we're going to win a Super Bowl, that's going to be because the offense is sort of steering the ship. But then next week I could sit here and be like, well, if you get a sort of a transcendental pass rusher, maybe trade up for that guy. I don't know if that guy's going to be there at pick 14. But if you find a way to land that guy, then maybe that does move the needle forward for the Falcons defense. And all of a sudden, instead of being an above average Saints-like defense, maybe you can be, you know, a defense that's comparable to, you know, Philadelphia or Jacksonville or whoever you want to insert, Minnesota, whoever you want to insert into the conversation, Baltimore, as having, you know, top 5 caliber defenses and consistently have those year in and year out. And that does not necessarily force the Falcons offense to have to carry the load and takes pressure off of Matt Ryan. And suddenly the Falcons can start to win games 23-20 or 20-17 on those off weeks where the offense isn't necessarily clicking, which has not been the case really for forever. So again, I don't necessarily, I know one listener in particular is upset because I don't have a strong take on this, because I think you can go both ways. I don't think there is a right answer. I don't think there's reason to have a strong take on it. It just depends on sort of how you feel, you know, how far away you feel the Falcons offense is from being elite versus how far you feel the Falcons defense is away from being elite, and whether you think there's a player in particular in this draft that can make you get closer, you know, close that gap between those two categories potentially. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting to sort of see how the Falcons address it. Yeah, there's the long, complex answer, Davon. All right, we'll come back in just a moment and talk more Falcons, answering some questions from my good friend Riley Streit. But before we get there, I want to remind you guys to check out the new Himalaya podcast app, where you can find Locked On Falcons or any Locked On Podcast Network show. In an ever-expanding podcast world, the Himalaya app has you covered with their carefully curated playlist and new features every day. Download the Himalaya app at your app store and listen to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show, your team every day. So our first question from Riley Streit comes via email. He asks, since Tampa hired Todd Bowles to be their defensive coordinator, they will be switching to a 3-4 defense. I know that the 3-4 is less popular throughout the NFL, but are there any stats that you have or inklings of how this will affect our offense in the Dan Quinn era? How that has affected our offense in the Dan Quinn era? Well, just looking at Pro Football Reference stats, in 4 years, in 20 games versus 3-4 defenses, based off of their categorization, the Falcons offense has averaged about 27.6 points per game against 3-4 teams, has a passer rating of 96.6 and an adjusted net yards per attempt of 6.99, and 44 games against 4-3 defenses, they've averaged 24.9 points and had a passer rating of 103 and an adjusted net yards per attempt of 7.62. So you look at they average a little bit less than a field goal more against 3-4 defenses, over the last four seasons, and their passing efficiency is a little bit better against 4-3 defense. So it's kind of a wash. And, you know, the whole 3-4 versus 4-3 is kind of an antiquated notion, because, you know, you're playing nickel 65 to 70% of the time, and the difference between a 3-4 team and a 4-3 team in nickel is, do you play a 2-4 or 4-2 and in terms of your front? And the only difference between those two is in the 2-4, your edge guys stand up, and in the 4-2, their hands are in the dirt. That's the only difference, really, between a 3-4 and a 4-3 at this point in time. Riley's next question is, restructuring deals pushes money into the future. I believe people's argument for it is that the salary cap is going up, so the extra hit will hurt less next year than it does this year and allow us to sign other players while we're at it. But isn't it really poor business and only making the situation continually worse? I read the estimated cap next year is $200 million. Obviously, this is an early guess, but that's only an increase of $12 million. By pushing Matt Ryan's deal heavier into future years, we've already eaten a good chunk of that and will likely eat most of the rest of it, or more than the rest of it, with Julio and Grady's deals. I would imagine we have several people coming up who will be needing extensions soon. Grady's still, Julio, Deion Jones, Keanu, Hooper, and not far after that, KZ. I know that TD has been really good with the salary cap and typically is said to always have where the money is going to come from in the back of his mind, but aren't we just setting ourselves up to lose key players by always pushing off to tomorrow and what we could deal with today? Well, Riley, you know, as the Falcons, the first thing I will say, as the Falcons sign several of these young players to second contracts, they're going to start pushing some of their veteran players out the door. And guys like Mack and Sanu and others, including guys like Brown and Carpenter, are going to start to come off the books in Beasley in the next year or two. And so basically you're going to have to swap older veteran guys for second contract younger guys. And so the key to sort of sustaining success is going to be based off of drafting. But dealing with sort of Matt Ryan's contract extension, and this refers to what I've mentioned on a previous episode, talking about the fact that Matt Ryan restructured his contract, taking this year's base salary, converting in the signing bonus, that freed up, I think, $7 million for the Falcons salary cap. And then when you look at Matt Ryan's future years, where in the next 4 years, starting in 2020, the next 4 years, his salary cap is going to be over $30 million. And I basically said that you're likely to see the similar type of restructure every offseason, from here into the future. So now, you know, going a little bit deeper into that, I don't think it's going to be as problematic as you think it is, Riley, in the long term, because I do think the Falcons have options to sort of basically work their way around the salary cap and basically keep working their way around the salary cap essentially until Matt Ryan retires, or at least or if stops being good and basically turns into Eli Manning, which hopefully will never happen, but and basically is no longer a factor in this team's ability to be in contention. But so, for example, Matt Ryan has a $20.5 million base salary in 2020, and if the Falcons were to take 15 of that and turn it into signing bonus, that would free up over $11 million in next year's salary cap, making his cap hit into $22 million in 2020. That would add a little bit less than $4 million to each of his remaining cap hits through the 2024 season. But so then you would have in 2021, you would have Matt Ryan having a cap hit of nearly $40 million. But then the Falcons could take $21 million of his $23 million base salary, turn that into signing bonus. That would wind up saving them about $14 million against the 2021 cap and turn his cap hit into $26 million. Now, 2022 would be about the point in time where they probably wouldn't be able to do that anymore, just due to the fact that Matt Ryan has a roster bonus coming up. His cap hit is going to be $47.5 million going into that 2022 season, and with only 2 years left on his contract, sort of this turning base salary and the signing bonus becomes a lot less effective because you can't spread out that money over many, many years as you could in the previous years. But what the Falcons could do to skirt that is either at that point in the offseason, or maybe potentially the summer before, I think the summer before is more likely, is that the Falcons could sign Matt Ryan to a contract extension. And one of the reasons what might facilitate that is over the next two offseasons, you have guys like Jared Goff and Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes that are going to potentially get paid their second contracts. That could potentially move the ball forward for how much top-end quarterbacks, and the Falcons could come on the back end and say, you know what, we're going to give Matt Ryan sort of a 2 or 3 year extension, you know, averaging whatever the going rate for a top quarterback is at that point in time, let's say $35 million on the back end of his deal. That would extend Matt Ryan's contract through 2025, which is his age 40 season, if it's a 2 year extension. And so you could have a situation where you're just basically once again punting, and you can just sort of restart the clock, where then starting in 2022 or whatever, for the next 2 to 4 years, you can then have a similar situation where you just basically restart the clock. And then by the time you get to the point where you can no longer restructure Matt Ryan's deal in the same manner, then you're at that point, Matt Ryan's going to be approaching age 40. And you're going to be looking at a situation where you're more concerned about finding Matt Ryan's heir apparent than necessarily worried about his salary cap hit. So I think the Falcons have ways of getting around this, but it's going to depend on, you know, being smart with their money and also drafting well. Like, the bottom line is, if they don't draft well over the next couple of years, as they have to remake their roster and probably get a lot younger on both the offense in particular and the defense, with draft picks, then all of this is moot. They're just going to be an also-ran. And basically, if they don't draft well, then none of this matters. And they'll just be a team that has a lot of expensive players, but get bounced in the playoffs every year in the first or second round or whatever. So we'll see how that goes. And we got more to come on today's episode, answering more questions from Riley, particularly focusing on the offensive line. And we'll get to those in a moment. But I do want to remind you guys to check out the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland. Find that on whatever podcast platform you prefer, including the new Himalaya app, your team every day. So Riley's next question is, I thought the consensus was that Wes Schweitzer was getting better and at least slightly above average. Why then bring in two guards rather than one and draft one, do you think? I am all for giving Fusco the boot. I wasn't a big fan of signing him, as I remember him being on the Vikings offensive line and giving people in the upper Midwest a lot of heartburn every time he trotted out there. So I understand replacing him, but Schweitzer is inexpensive, and unless you're going to actually bring in someone who's really a clear upgrade, such as we did with Mac, was this really worth it? Well, you know, not to be super cynical, but no, I don't think it really was. I think Brown and Carpenter are kind of lateral moves in a lot of ways. I think the argument for them is that, you know, they'll be a little bit more consistent than Schweitzer. When Schweitzer is good, he's good, but you get a lot of games where, probably too many games, I would argue, where Schweitzer is not very good, and when he's not very good, he's pretty terrible. And so the hope is that between Brown and Carpenter, you're going to have far less of those games, even if it doesn't necessarily mean that many more really good games from those guys. So it was surprising to me to see the Falcons sign two of those guys. I fully expected them to sign at least one sort of starting caliber offensive lineman to sort of compete, but to see them basically go with two guys and firmly commit to both of those guys for this season and presumably next season was a little bit of a surprise for me. Riley's next question is, I also understand that we need to bring in people as camp bodies, but aren't some of these offensive linemen we're bringing in having too high a salary to be camp bodies? How does a camp body salary affect salary cap? Well, I'm not sure who you're referring to other than Adam Geddes. He's the only guy that I really think would qualify as a camp body. And, you know, I haven't seen the terms of his contract, but I'm assuming it's a veteran minimum deal, which means he's going to be making less than $700,000, which really doesn't affect the salary cap. And that's not too expensive for a camp body. A veteran minimum deal, that's the same amount of money that Jeremy Langford and Mike Bennett are making. And neither of those guys are locks to make the team by any means. So I'm not sure how, you know, what you're referring to is that. Riley's next question is, also, we now have six interior offensive linemen and two tackles. Typically, a team carries a swing tackle in case of emergency. Are we really going to carry 9 or 10 offensive linemen on our roster? I would argue offensive line is our biggest need. With this many offensive line making well over the minimum on our roster as we stand, are we really going to add a 10th or 11th lineman in the draft, or are we out of the market because of the money that we have there? I think, you know, you look at the Falcons historically under Dan Quinn, they have mostly carried 9 offensive linemen. Sometimes they've carried 8, generally due to injuries elsewhere, forcing them to give up an offensive lineman roster spot and give it to another roster spot. Sometimes they've carried 10, which usually has coincided when they've had multiple injuries on the offensive line and needed to carry an extra body there, like we saw last year, I think, after they picked up Riso Diambo and Zane Beatles. I think that week after the bye, after Fusco's injury, they had 10 offensive linemen for that week. So 9 is not is normal in the NFL. And when you look at the current roster, you got the 5 locks to make the team. You got Jake Matthews, Alex Mack, Jamon Brown, James Carpenter, Ty Sambrello. Then I think Schweitzer is close to a lock. I wouldn't say he's like 100% a lock, but he's very unlikely to get cut. After that, then you have Fusco, and then Gano. And then, you know, if you use a high round pick on an offensive tackle, which I expect the Falcons to use one of their first 2 to 3 picks on an offensive tackle, that's going to be your 9th guy. And that's your 9-man offensive line group for 2019 in all likelihood. And that leaves guys like Geddes and Harlow out in the cold. And the question is going to be, do the Falcons add then on top of that early round offensive tackle, do the Falcons go in and get an interior offensive lineman later in the draft, maybe in round 3 or 4? If it's in so round 3 or 4, at that point in time, that player is almost a certainty to make the team. And so that really is going to challenge a guy like Fusco for his roster spot, where he's going to be less safe. I mentioned on yesterday's episode, I talked a little bit about maybe Geddes sort of pushing Fusco out the door. I probably overestimated that. I want to backtrack a little bit on that. I think it's possible if Geddes comes in and plays really well this summer, that the Falcons could see Fusco as expendable. But it's unlikely, given the fact that Geddes, I don't think, has made an NFL roster coming out of training camp since 2013, which was his second year in the league when he was in Washington, the team that drafted him, and back when Chris Morgan was the assistant offensive line coach there. But basically ever since then, when he's been with the Giants for a couple of summers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last season, he hasn't been able to make an NFL roster coming out of training camp. He's made the Giants practice squad a couple of times at the start of the season. So I don't feel like Geddes is like, you know, particularly at his age and given his overall body of work, is like a safe bet. And that's why we refer to him as a camp body, that he's there to bolster competition, but isn't likely to make the team in really any regard. So we'll have to see about that. But I think what will be interesting to sort of see if the Falcons do add another interior, a second offensive lineman in this draft, which if they do manage to keep most of their 9 picks, I think becomes a greater possibility the later we get in the draft. But what's going to really be interesting is the competition between Schweitzer, between Fusco, between Geddes, to see sort of who emerges as that sort of utility interior offensive lineman that's going to be the backup at center in both guard positions. Again, I think Schweitzer, as I mentioned on yesterday's episode, is the front runner for that position, but we'll have to sort of see that competition play out. And if the Falcons add another player to that competition via the draft, or if they, you know, pull a James Stone or whatever the case may be and get sort of a phenom as an undrafted free agent that could really sort of, you know, make, you know, be a shot across the bow for Fusco and potentially make the Falcons be willing to sort of move on from him at the end of training camp and sort of talk about what you're talking about, Riley, where you're not necessarily carrying an expensive backup, which at this point in time, Fusco would be, you know, costing the team nearly $5 million. So we'll have to sort of see what the Falcons do between now and August if they make a significant addition on the interior offensive line, because that could push Fusco's contract is going to make him potentially expendable. But again, a lot of that depends on how players perform, how he comes back from injury, all those various factors that at this point in time are unknown today. So our last question comes from New Jersey Falcons Ronan at Mave2124. He asks, he basically asked my thoughts on an article that Joe Cowherd from CBS Sports wrote about sort of Julio Jones and what his contract would look like. And I retweeted this on Twitter. I'll try to remember to post it, the link to it in the show notes on FalcFans.com. But basically, my thoughts on that is Joe basically outlined similar to what I was talking about not that long ago, which was basically the core of the contract is giving Julio Jones, you know, guaranteeing him basically $50 million over the next 3 years that matches Antonio Brown, and then adding on some additional money, you know, that is quote unquote $20 million per year in new money, you know, in addition beyond 2021. Which is basically what I sort of talked about on a recent episode is what I think is the likely outcome. So my thoughts are like, you know, I'm glad that, you know, someone with some legitimacy like Joe Corey, a former agent who's been covering sort of contracts and, you know, these sorts of things for CBS for a number of years and is often the go-to guy when guys sign contracts, sort of contextualize that when you see his media appearances. It's nice to sort of see him sort of basically aping and repeating, you know, I'm not such he's copying off of me, but for, you know, basically what I sort of have seen as this, the likely outcome of this Julio Jones situation being what he's basically saying right now. So there you have it, guys. Another Q&A in the books. I appreciate everybody for sending in their questions. We'll be back on Monday to talk more draft. I'm going to try to get a guest to get more in depth on the draft come Monday. If I don't manage to book a guest, then we'll just do another Q&A so you can guys send in those for like a Monday mailbag episode. And you know where to hit me up. You can do email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Twitter and Facebook, the show's Twitter handle, the show's Facebook page are Locked On Falcons on both social media sites. And of course, you can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons. Your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.